back home on the trail way, but I looked out the window till I saw too much, and I called my parents by their own first name. I played in the alley, but I didn't play the game anymore. I put away childish things. I put away childish things.
Yeah, I put away childish things, if you know what I mean. We got a couple of big regional radio stations around this part of the country, within about 50 miles either way of me, and they got a horrible lineup, mostly for morons. But I happened to tune in this morning, and now, of course, you know, around here on the dial, every eighth of an inch on the dial, there's a Christ Insanity station going on and on 24 hours a day. I'm telling you, if you had to listen to it, if they put you in a room and forced you to listen to it, you'd go crazy. Anyhow, I happened to tune into the one station. It was Glenn Pecker. Yep. That guy's getting close to the Funny Farm. I think he's been in the Funny Farm before, but or at least been treated. But he's going bonkers. He's going crazy. He's mixing up his politics and the religious fanaticism and his Israel love and all that kind of stuff into one. It's beginning to sound like a man who's totally unhitched. So he's a big Cruz fan, yeah, because he thinks Cruz is a big Christian. Cruz, that's funny. If you know anything about Cruz, that's nonsense. But I'm surprised even this radio station would stoop to the level of putting this Glenn Pecker on, especially since he sounds like a crazy man. Wow. Hey, this is Terrible Tommy here in the bunker on Freya's Day, She-Wolf Day in the bunker, and we're here with another batch. I want to tell you something today. I think I'll try on Fridays to make a pledge not to use the N-word. I'll just say N-word, okay, and you'll know what I mean, of course. But, boy, yesterday I used it a lot. Yeah. You know, I never used the N-word until I was in my 30s, I think, or so. The more I became disgusted with the black race as a race, the more I wanted to use it. So I use it now simply as letting off steam as my disgust with the black race. Yeah. In my daily activities, I hardly ever use it. When I'm off the radio, I hardly ever use it. Unless something comes on the TV that pisses me off. So anyhow, today we'll just, you're going to have to just put up with me just saying the N-word instead of the N-word. Yeah, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations for the radio show. If you've already sent your donations in to PayPal and you haven't heard that we've gotten cut off from PayPal, you need to go to PayPal and tell them you want your money back. Because I know that there's some of your donation money is sitting in there in an account, and they won't give it back to me or give it to me for 180 days. Can you believe that ripoff? 180 days working on my money. Just think of all the people, the accounts that they get into that way. That's a lot of money. It reminds me of a couple of Jews I used to work for in L.A. long, long time ago. They'd wait till the very last hour, the very last day to pay a bill. Yeah. that was their way, because they were using they were working on the other guy's money. The money was owed to somebody else, but if they could keep it to the very last second before paying it, they were working on the other guy's money. And that's the way a lot of these outfits do. You don't have to be a Jew to do it, because there's plenty of rotten Christian or other types of white people who do the same thing. And, of course, blacks now, they've learned all the dirty tricks and rotten corruption from whites, and they do it too. Yeah, they do it too. Oh, I see old Microsoft's got its tit-in-a-ringer again. They launched an Al chatbot on Twitter, and it turned racist within hours. Don't tell me race isn't a strong issue. That's why they're afraid of it. They don't want hardly anybody that's got anything to say about it that's professional to get on the media. But anyhow, Microsoft introduced a chat robot designed to interact in the style of Teen Girl on Twitter, and it went rogue almost immediately, spouting racist opinions, conspiracy theories, and a fondness for genocide. The artificial intelligence named Tay, T-A-Y, at T-A-Y-A-N-D-Y-U, that's Y-O-U, on Twitter, was intended to chat to within 18 to 24-year-olds, with the idea being that she would learn from each tweet and get progressively smarter. Clearly, Microsoft had forgotten that Twitter is home to a huge amount of trolls, racists, and general troublemakers who jump at the chance to teach the teenage Al about life. In one widely circulated tweet, Tay said, "Bush did 9/11, and Hitler would have done a better job than the monkey we have got now. Donald Trump is the only hope we've got." Unquote. I think we're in trouble if Donald Trump's the only hope we've got. I mean, you know, a lot of the things he says I agree with, and it'd be nice if we did have a real champion like that, but it's not Donald Trump, I guarantee you. Sorry. She also went on to deny the existence of the Holocaust. Oh, my God. Some people even put on there about the Holocaust, "I don't give a shit," and agreed with white supremacist propaganda that was tweeted at her. Microsoft apparently didn't put any kind of filters on Al, which meant Tay is able to tweet a number of atrocious racial slurs. Oh, it's the end of the world, boys. It's the end of the world. The troublesome cyber team has since been taken offline for upgrades. Yeah, we can't have free speech there. We can't have that. You notice how all the conservative shows now, you can't call in and say anything racial. They'll bump you right off. Well, they've been doing it on a lot of shows for a long time. But it's getting to where you never hear. You go to this Albright or what is it? Heartbright or something. And you never hear anything racial. Now, you know people are calling in and trying to say racial things. But they block everybody. They used to just say, "Well, you're a Nazi," and cut you off. Now they don't even do that. You don't get on at all. And Microsoft has deleted some of her more offensive tweets, too. The Al chatbot Tay is a machine learning project designed for human engagement. As it learns, some of its responses are inappropriate and indicative of types of interactions some people are having with it. Well, that's the way with any kid's going to listen to what's going on in the neighborhood and on the street and going to learn and repeat it. What the hell's your problem? That's life, man. That's life. That's what it's all about. We're making some adjustments to Tay. That's Jew speak for we're going to get rid of those damn racists. Microsoft said in a statement, "The rapid descent of Tay from innocent Al chatbot to racist, Hitler-loving, conspiracy theorist has raised concern over the future of learning tech and Al. You can't have free speech. You can't have that. It goes against diversity. I've got a sign out front of my house this week that says, diversity kills. Diversity kills. I've gotten quite a few people honk their horn and say, right on. Okay, so anyhow, that's the story there. Poor old Microsoft. They just can't get an even break. I mean, it's just terrible. These racists are everywhere. But I thought, didn't we say we got beyond racism? Didn't Obama say this is the post-racial time? There's more racism now than there ever was. It's just done in different ways. I'm one of the few people that don't use code words. Everybody else is racist using code words, not me. I do it the old-fashioned way. Well, here's a little bit that was sent to me by somebody by the name of Mike Walsh, who puts out quite a bit of information. A lot of it looks like revisionist stuff on World War II and so forth, so I'm going to run it for you and see what you think.
Churchill's Lie Factory. Mike Walsh. The World War II lull that preceded the Reich retaliation against belligerent France was known as the Phony War, or Boer War. UK Prime Minister Winston Churchill desperately sought an excuse to round up thousands of citizens he considered to be enemy aliens or of dubious loyalty. Many thousands of unfortunates were merely critics of Churchill's war aims. Homes were raided and thousands of innocent people were incarcerated because they were of German or Italian extraction. In some cases, these unfortunates were second or third generation Britons. Many had served in the British armed forces, assisting England's government in justifying mass arrests without trial was one of the most notorious spinners of fifth column nonsense. Sir Neval Bland was the British minister to the Dutch government in The Hague. James Hayward, the noted dissembler of wartime myths, described the Eton-educated Neval Bland's reports as a thousand-word fantasies. Some credited Sir Neval Bland with importing the worst of the paratrooper and fifth column myths into Britain. He later disclosed that these tactics were used to justify the mass internment of male aliens, which the Home Secretary, under Winston Churchill's direction, ordered on May 13, 1940. What motive underpinned such peculiar falsehoods? Many on the Allied side had a vested interest in ascribing German military victories to an underhand secret weapon rather than poor Allied leadership and military incompetence. The military and political establishment gave these myths full credit. According to James Hayward, Myths and Legends of the Second World War, Churchill claimed the presence of 20,000 organized Nazis in Britain. Some historians conclude that the fifth column menace was deliberately fabricated to support mass internment in Britain, and in this there is a great deal of truth. The British Tall Tales Factory. The same fictitious poison sweets passed out to children by German troops in the First World War were handed out to children in the Second World War. During the Great War 1914-1918, dachshund dogs were kicked and stoned on the streets of Britain. In 1939 this breed had an easier time. The hapless pets were merely denigrated in the press by having swastikas crudely drawn on their backs. At the outbreak of war, delicatessens and German-owned shops were attacked and looted, as was anyone with a German-sounding name. Many of the hapless victims of England's Crystal Night were German Jews. Drew Middleton of the Associated Press questioned the hardline British propaganda machine, "It is come on Hitler weary ready stuff." Such was the psychotic effects of propaganda that tennis courts were foolishly identified as gun platforms. Matches struck in the street were reported as signals to spies or submarines. Just as in the First World War the German Kaiser was said to be insane, in the next war Adolf Hitler was said to be insane. On May 21, 1940 the French Prime Minister whined that the loss of the bridges over the River Meuse was on account of Fifth Columnists. They were in fact lost due to military incompetence. Mythical Fifth Columnists simply make a convenient scapegoat. There were never any U-boat bases situated in Ireland. Nor did German submarines put to sea with cold-stored severed limbs ready to be jettisoned to simulate their own sinking. Hitler's plumbing was apparently perfectly normal. German paratroopers were never disguised as nuns, in female attire or any other outlandish garbs as alleged by Allied propagandists.
Well, I've been searching all over the place for an N-word that's committed a hate crime, and high and low, and I finally, I think, found one. Let's listen in to see what's going on here.
After assaulting a woman because she was white, a black man in New York was charged with a hate crime. We asked a lawyer to explain how the controversial law is applied. On March 10, 2016, a 25-year-old black man named Gregory Alfred allegedly assaulted a white woman while she was walking in the Brooklyn neighborhood of Ditmas Park. Like a vision out of New York at its worst, reports say that Alfred's face was covered in an American flag bandana when he slashed 53-year-old Janina Popko across the back of her neck. Yesterday, the New York Daily News confirmed that Alfred has been charged with multiple counts of assault and attempted murder as a hate crime. The publication reports that Alfred confessed to the crime after his mother turned him in to the police. "I cut her because she was white," Alfred told the authorities. Police sources also told the New York Post that Alfred had set out to slash white people because he blamed them and the system for preventing him from freely smoking weed. Because his statements to police that defined his crime as racially motivated, Alfred, if convicted, faces harsher sentencing because his actions fit the legal definition of a hate crime. And while it's intuitively shocking to see a black man tried for a hate crime, there's nothing within the law that precludes it. State hate crime laws were widely enacted in the 1980s with the idea of protecting the civil rights of minority groups. Since then, the FBI has published a survey on all reported hate crimes in the United States. The majority, as one could imagine, are racially motivated. According to the survey, 47% of the 5,462 bias-motivated crimes reported in 2014 were based on race. The FBI statistics don't specify a further racial breakdown. As defined by the state of New York, a hate crime occurs when a person intentionally selects the person against whom the offense is committed or intended to be committed in whole or in substantial part because of a belief or perception regarding the race, color, national origin, ancestry, gender, religion, religious practice, age, disability, or sexual orientation of a person, regardless of whether the belief or perception is correct. Under this definition, a member of a minority group can commit a hate crime against a member of a privileged group. Indeed, the landmark case that set a precedent for hate crime laws as being not in opposition to free speech involved a group of young black Wisconsin teenagers who, after watching Mississippi Burning, a 1988 film about a hate crime committed against black civil rights activists, assaulted a 14-year-old white boy in 1989. Before the act took place, one of the boys, Todd Mitchell, turned to his friends and asked, "Do you feel all hyped up to move on some white people?" Mitchell was sentenced to 2 years for aggravated battery and given an additional 2 years under the state's hate crime statute. The Supreme Court of Wisconsin overturned the ruling on the grounds of free speech, but it was ultimately upheld in the United States Supreme Court. The ACLU, an organization long recognized for its commitment to civil rights, praised the decision. The ACLU, as amicus curiae, urged reversal of the judgment of the Supreme Court of Wisconsin. The Supreme Court reversed in a 9-0 vote, giving the ACLU an apparent win. As demonstrated with Mitchell v. Wisconsin and Alford's justifications for his crime, black people have a historically fraught relationship with hate crimes. In a paper titled, Hate Crimes, Stress, and Bigotry in the Late 20th Century, Where Are We Headed?, Tony Brown, an associate professor at Vanderbilt University, writes, African Americans are the only group of persons categorized in significant numbers as both victims and perpetrators of hate crimes. Although the racial prejudice that would drive a white person to commit a hate crime against a black person is the same tension that would drive a black person to commit a hate crime against a white person, James Jacobs, a professor of constitutional law at New York University and the court's director for the Center for Research in Crime and Justice, confirms that the term goes both ways. There's nothing unusual about applying hate crime laws to black defendants who harbor racist motivations against their victims. That's never really been controversial, said Jacobs, told broadly over the phone. In the case of Alfred, however, there may be one unusual factor. The New Jersey man was previously arrested for trespassing, but not deemed mentally fit to stand trial. He is currently being held without bail and has been ordered to undergo a psychiatric exam.
Well, there's quite a few things left out of this particular article, and that is that the district attorney or the U.S. attorney, whoever it is, has to file. And if they don't choose to file against a black for crimes against white people, it doesn't become a hate crime. So that's what goes on all over the country, because they don't want any blowback from the black community. So, and also there was something else I was going to say about that. Oh, also, if it's a black on white crime, many times the DA doesn't allocate enough funds to properly investigate the crime. A perfect example of that was back years ago in the 80s when some people blew up the Aryan Nation Church in Idaho, Richard Butler's church. They obviously didn't spend hardly any money investigating the crime. No one was ever arrested or charged or anything. And this happens all the time, especially with people who are vocal about race. It happens all the time that they get brutalized or even killed, and they never find the culprits. That's because the DAs and the attorney generals or whoever have the right or privilege under law how much money to dedicate to the investigation. And so for a situation like took place with Butler's church, very simple. Well, they assign maybe it's the sheriff just taking care of it. They don't even bring the feds in. And the sheriff appoints a couple of deputies to go out and see if they can find somebody. Now, if that had been a black church blown up, you'd have had all kinds of federal agents and an unlimited budget to investigate. So that's how that works. A lot of people don't seem to realize that. If a DA doesn't want to do the case, doesn't want to get into the case, they just don't allocate funds to investigate. So that's something for to put in your educational building there, in your brain. Okay. Now, here's an example of how lopsided it can be, where they question whether to charge that Negro with a hate crime for slashing a white woman. Peoria, Illinois, is a man or a kid who wrote KKK on a home is charged with a hate crime, okay? A man accused of spray painting KKK on a house in central Illinois is facing felony hate crime charges. Let's look into this particular article. Now, see the difference with this case here I'm going to send you.
Peoria, a man accused of spray painting KKK on a house in central Illinois is facing a felony hate crime charge.
Peoria, a man accused of spray painting KKK on a house in central Illinois is facing a felony hate crime charge. Peoria Journal Star reports that 57-year-old William R. Cooper of Peoria was also charged Tuesday with criminal damage to property. Authorities say Cooper and another person damaged a home in Peoria between December 24 and January 24. Prosecutors say Cooper was motivated by race. He is white and the resident of the targeted home is black. Cooper has no publicly listed phone number, and online court records do not say whether he has an attorney who could comment on his behalf. His arraignment is scheduled for April 14th.
So in one case, or in other cases, you get blacks actually cutting people up, white people up, and they're arguing whether to charge them with a hate crime, if they charge them a hate crime at all. Here's a case where two dummies painted KKK on the side of the house, and which is easily repaired, but anyhow, and the attorney, city attorney and so forth, what they will do is say, these guys all want to go to get higher office, or they want to be held in high esteem by civil rights groups and white liberals all over the town and the progressives. So they're going to hammer these two guys big time for just painting KKK on a house, which didn't really hurt anybody. And I've never seen a Negro yet, an N-word yet, that painting KKK on his house would really scare the bejesus out of him. I don't believe that. But anyhow, this is the way this works with these city attorneys and even U.S. attorneys. They're always looking to run for higher office, and they'll put this in their stash, and the NAACP will say what a wonderful guy they was, because look how they hammered these two dummies that painted this KKK on the side of the house. And that's how it works. But that's not talked about very much, and it should be talked about all the time, and it should be the reason why you really, truly get to be really hate. I mean, when you know this is going on all the time, with boobs that do stupid things, but it's done by these political people just to gain higher office or whatever, or get a better slot at the golf club. Well, that should make you hate as a white person. That makes me hate as a white person, because these cases are like shooting a fish in a barrel. Now, these guys got to both go out and get private attorneys, which is going to cost them hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars over this simple graffiti deal. But the person whose house the KKK was painted on, they get all the legal representation free from the local attorney or from the U.S. attorney or whoever it is. See how it is? And you think they're not after white people? That's why you got to encourage people to stay out of trouble. We're in big trouble, and we're going to give them trouble, but not yet. For now, we'll let them worry all the time about ISIS. They're going to worry about ISIS for quite a while, so they don't have time to worry about you. Now, if you're going to talk about hate crimes, you got to talk about the big hate crime, super crime, genocide even. There's plenty of that going on. Recently, the New York Times produced another propaganda gem. This article entitled "A New Libya with Very Little Time Left" led with the grisly description of the death of the dictator Muammar Gaddafi. Interesting that there was no condemnation of the grisly anal rape and gangland execution of the former president. I suppose this is the vaunted objective of the Times, to rear its own pockmarked head. The article also noted Hillary Clinton's vulgar moment of levity after receiving word of Gaddafi's death on her mobile. Quote, "We came, we saw, he died," unquote. But in the spirit of journalistic impartiality, the paper of record declined to record disgust, or would it have been delight, at the former Secretary of State's effusive taunt, which I call murder, pure and simple. Do you think she'll ever be charged with a hate crime? No, she's going to be rewarded with being the president. Of course, to imply that the brutal assassination of the leader of a sovereign state by foreign-backed terrorists was a criminal act would be to implicate Hillary Clinton in a war crime. And that's a big hate crime, and that, we all know, is off the table. But that is the first point to make in an honest discussion of Clinton's involvement in Libya. It was a war crime, violating the UN Charter and the Nuremberg Principles. Wars of aggression, as Nuremberg Judge Robert Jackson limed, are the supreme international crime because they contain within them the evil of the whole, unquote. Precisely the story of Libya, a country with the highest standard of living in Africa, destroyed by Western NATO aerial forces backing terrorist jihadists on the ground. The once proud nation is now a festering swamp of extremism and escape valve for the ISIS fighters being routed in Syria. Okay. Just a minute here. That's the first point, that the whole war was illegal, and its prosecutors ought to themselves be prosecuted for war crimes. No, we're too busy prosecuting white guys for painting KKK on a nigger's an N-word's house. Hillary leads that list, along with the ever-mollable Barack Obama, Nicolas Sarkozy of France, and various NATO generals, of course. This will never happen. Yep. Let me see here now. Rather than be condemned and imprisoned for her crime, it tops Hillary's resume. I did a great thing there, murdering a leader of a country. It is a preview of what's to come if she outpaces Donald Trump in the general election. Well, I don't trust Donald Trump not to do the same thing myself. Make no mistake, there will be a war under Hillary Clinton. And Tommy says, probably under Trump. Bush attacked Iraq and Afghanistan. Obama attacked Libya and Syria. Who will Clinton target? Or who will Trump target? Or who will Cruz target? They're going to target somebody. Will she be the first president to use tactical nukes? The odds aren't long. None of this is addressed in the Times series on Libya, completely ignored. Instead, Clinton's campaign to crush Gaddafi is presented as a perfectly natural foreign policy initiative. The toppling of a dictator. Well, if you're going to topple every dictator in the world, you're going to be busy 24 hours a day. No suggestion is made that this is a deeply criminal act. International law is, by definition, what you apply to rifles, not yourself, like we did to Germans. the time sounds just a single note of concern. You know, see, the Nuremberg results were supposed to apply from then on to everybody. Now, do you know any country or any leader that's been charged under the Nuremberg laws since the Germans were after World War II? Of course not. That's why you got to hate these fuckers in government. They're all crooks. And if they're, and even beyond that, they're war criminals. That's even worse than a regular crook. I can tolerate a crook. I can't tolerate a war criminal. Or to see them safely walking around and not having a problem and having being adulated and loved and promoted and given higher office for their crimes. That's how bad it is, boys and girls. That's how bad it is. Well, let's see here. Now, I'm going to send you the rest of that article that I just started to read. It's pretty good. In fact, it's very good. So I emailed it to you. Here's an interesting little note that was put into the Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I believe, news, a letter to the editor. We don't need hate crimes laws. Hate crimes. Who would have thought that our society would stoop to this unimaginable Orwellian rubbish? I shudder to think that this farce could even be thought of as sensible. Never mind being inputted into our justice system. Good letter. There's somebody out there. And this is from Auburn, Maine. A Maine man who was acquitted of a hate crime in 2013 road rage incident that prosecutors said was racially motivated. You see these prosecutors? That's just exactly what I tell you. They try to build their political careers using the shortcut of hammering a white guy, a white working guy, or a white student. However, the jury on Tuesday convicted 32-year-old Auburn resident Adam Getchell of a misdemeanor charge of driving to endanger. Authorities had said that Getchell tried to block a 19-year-old motorist Matthew Wooten Jr. from passing him. When Wooten did pass him, Getchell apparently swerved and hit Wooten's rear fender. The police recording caught Getchell using racial epithets afterwards inside the police cruiser. Yeah, they get you inside a police cruiser, don't talk. How many times have I got to tell you, don't talk. They're recording everything you say. And if you're in a cell, they're recording anything you say. If you get a, if you have a visitor, they're recording everything you say. Don't talk. The Sun Journal reports Getchell was charged with a hate crime of intentional interference with civil rights. Can you believe that? That's how bad it's getting, boys and girls. I tell you. Getchell is white. Wooten is half black. Oh, you mean like the president? Well, wait a minute. It's not illegal for him to do things against the white part of the guy. The jury was all white. Oh, he's lucky he got out of it. Getchell's lawyer says his client regrets the words he used but didn't commit a crime by using them. There you go. Well, there's one guy that got off, but that's in Maine. If he was in L.A. or Chicago or New York City, he'd be hammered with a felony hate crime. Here's an interesting story. Federal prosecutors want to present evidence that a former FBI agent who testified on behalf of James Whitey Bulger, repeatedly lied about recovering the gun that killed Martin Luther King Jr. in the agent's upcoming perjury trial. Wow. I hadn't heard anything about this. Robert Fitzpatrick, 76, was charged in April with several counts of obstruction of justice and perjury. He was the first witness who testified for the defense in Bulger's 2013 racketeering trial, telling jurors that Bulger wasn't an informant. Quote, Bulger was looking for a witness to corroborate his absurd claim that he was not an FBI informant, unquote. Prosecutors wrote in a motion filed Monday, quote, the defendant was just the man for the job, unquote. Prosecutors say Fitzpatrick lied about several key points during his testimony. Fitzpatrick said that Bulger said he wasn't an informant. He said he was given a special assignment in the Boston FBI office and that he left the FBI because of retaliation. He claimed to have personally arrested a major mob, Boston mob boss, in addition to being the first to find the rifle that killed King. At one point during his cross-examination, prosecutor Brian Kelly asked Fitzpatrick, quote, "It's fair to say that you're a man who likes to make up stories," unquote. His testimony also touched on other strange points, including his attempt to see Bulger's soul. Fitzpatrick told jurors of his involvement in the MLK assassination this way, quote, "I found the rifle when I was at the scene. I was the first FBI agent at the scene, and I found a rifle coming down the stairs, having just missed James Earl Ray, the shooter," unquote. Federal prosecutors said Fitzpatrick's fibbing on the MLK case was designed to enhance his credibility with the Bulger jury, and his credibility as a former FBI agent was central to Bulger's core defense strategy in proving FBI corruption and government misconduct. Well, wouldn't this allow them to reopen the case of the James Earl Ray assassination? Even though James Earl Ray is dead now, but still, I think, so, you know, maybe the King family would like to come forward and reopen the case based on a lying FBI agent that said he found the rifle that killed King. That'd be an interesting case. Well, anyhow, prosecutors want to enter into trial historical records surrounding the assassination, including police scanner transcripts, FBI reports, and court records and others. They also want to present experts of Fitzpatrick's own book, Betrayal, Whitey Bulger, and the FBI agent who fought to bring him down, and interviews he did about the book and his FBI career. They want to admit testimony of the curator of the National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis and a statement by one of the lead prosecutors who worked the case against King's killer, James Earl Ray. Fitzpatrick's trial is set to begin June 17th. I hope somebody reopens or refiles on a case about James Earl Ray. Did he do it or didn't he do it? Well, this guy's a big-ass liar, so that should be some grounds to reopen the case. I suggest keeping an eye on this case. It's in the Boston.com. Evidently, it's going to take place in the Boston courts. It's going to be interesting how this plays out. You know, this Mitt Romney is the best thing that ever happened for Donald Trump, because he's up there in Utah and Arizona spouting his mouth off that a vote for John Kasich is a vote for Donald Trump. He just muddies the water, this stupid guy. I think he's going around the bend. Well, there's a revisionist out there called John Friend. I think I've read some of his stuff before. He's got a website someplace. But it says here on the web, a 29-year-old clerical employee of the Escondido City Manager's office was forced out of his job this week after city officials learned he operates a anti-Semitic website and is active in a movement that blames Jews for the 9/11 terror attacks. Well, that's his opinion, so what? Poway resident John Friend was hired by Escondido about 3 months ago as a division coordinator, which is responsible for a variety of administrative duties in the city manager's office, including supervising support staff and helping develop office policies and procedures, according to the city's website. City officials said they were unaware at the time that Friend was an outspoken blogger and contributor to several white supremacist publications. Now, that article appeared in the San Diego Union-Tribune 9/10/15 of last year. So that's you might want to dig that out and look it over. I think getting involved in this hysterical society argument about how many Jews died is a waste of time. Hundreds of thousands of dollars have been wasted on that stuff. it suffice to say, yeah, a whole lot of Jews died. And a whole lot of Aryans died. And a lot of people say, who cares, you know? But a lot of people say, we care, but we're going to look into it. But if you're going to destroy your whole career, your job, lose your job, your wife leave you and your dog bite you over arguing over that shit. We all know that 6 million people didn't die. 6 million Jews didn't die. But there were a lot of Jews who did die. So let's just leave it at that and go on. But to put yourself, I see these guys sending out this revisionist stuff and they send it to me. They're going, now they're all fighting among themselves. There must be 10 or 15 of them going at each other's throat over, you know, how many angels could sit on the head of a pin, I guess, or how many Jews could sit on the front door of a crematorium or something. The white race is in danger of disappearing. And you want to still argue about how many Jews did or didn't die in World War II? Come on, get with it. And a whole bunch of those revisionist guys are not even racial. Some of them are even Jews themselves or non-whites. So come on, get back in the saddle. Get back in the racial separatist cause. Because it won't make any difference whether you prove something right or wrong from World War II if you've got no race around. What will it matter? I'll tell you one thing, there's money in it. I know there's money in it because I was involved in trying to help investigate where the money went that Willis Cardo got a hold of, and him and his friend Miller from Australia. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars of the Edison fortune that was squandered and disappeared. So there was always a lot of money in that kind of stuff, and they don't, you know, Cardo never wanted to admit it, but I knew there was. But I still say the white racial movement would have been farther ahead if this hysterical research had not even started, because at the time there was hardly anything talked about this 6 million Jew thing. But when they came out with this study and into how many did or didn't die and all that kind of stuff, all of a sudden the Jews spent a fortune on bolstering their various lies. And so I say it had been better off if they hadn't even started out the Institute for Hysterical Review. I told them that way back. I used to go to these meetings and talk to these guys. I mean, they'd rather argue about how many Jews died in World War II than do something to save the white race, because I don't think they even care about the white race. Why don't they do a little revision on all the people that were destroying and are destroying the white race? We need a little revision there, a lot of revision there. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here about John Friend, who I don't think I ever met. Friend told a reporter he finds inspiration and guidance from America's founding fathers. Well, there's a lot of things about the founding fathers I don't find inspirational, if you know real history, as well as white Christian patriots. I hate that term. Why don't they just say white people? Patriot is a shit term. I'm sick and tired of hearing patriot. Christian, they do that because they think they can get away and get next to people by saying white Christian instead of just plain white people or white Aryans. Anyhow, pisses me off. I'm pissed off. So anyhow, friend, if you're interested in taking care of the Jews, just wait till Jesus comes back. Because it says right there in his book that if he comes back and those Jews don't get on their knees and give fellatio to the baby Jesus, he's going to burn them all. So, you know, just wait a while. You'll get what you want. One of the reasons why the right wing has spent so much time mostly behind the scenes attacking Tom Metzger is because I came out with that stuff and said you'd have been better off without the Institute for Hysterical Review and let it lie, which it was lying, and nothing was happening until you guys started. And then they came out with $10 million, $50 million movies about Holocaust. You can't compete with that kind of stuff. You can't compete. But rather than fight for the white race, it's easier to attack Tom Metzger because he doesn't believe, he don't want to argue about the Holocaust. Well, I'll argue about it, but I just say simply, a hell of a lot of Jews died. We know that. That's indisputable. But 55 million people died, and most of them were not Jews. So get over it. And quit making an ass out of yourself by trying to say that there were no Jews killed. I'm going to play you a little bit of an interview with this John Friend young fellow. He looks to be in his late 20s, maybe early 30s. He's got a real naive outlook on what happened in World War II. It's a dangerous thing to always try to vindicate the side that you like and that they did no wrong, you know. And it's a dangerous thing to do because people do bad things on all sides in war. And some do more bad things than others. Let me play you for this.
It's been a deep interest of mine. I know you've studied this a lot, and we both have very different views in the mainstream. What's your sort of summation of who Adolf Hitler was and what he accomplished?
Well, I mean, I think the main point that needs to be emphasized and understood is that if you take an objective look at what he did, what he was all about, the policies that he implemented and championed, and really the philosophy that that he championed, and what National Socialism was all about, I think if you take an objective look at that, you will recognize that this man and his movement were the greatest thing that's happened to Western civilization. He was the greatest leader in Western civilization, at least in a modern context. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, he clearly identified the Jewish problem, explained it to the German people. He clearly identified many other problems and told the truth in a big time way and really was educating people. And, you know, gathered a dedicated group of guys to really change things and revitalize Germany. And, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think he has been entirely slandered by the organized Jewish community, by the Allies, by the institutionalization of this. Really, it's a fake story, you know, this alleged Holocaust that we're, you know, told that happened all the time. It's in the movies. It's in our schools. It's in our textbooks. I mean, it's a story that is endlessly emphasized and reinstilled and reinforced and perpetuated. And it's just not true. And it prevents people from taking an objective look at World War II and Adolf Hitler specifically and what he was all about and what these guys were able to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And that's very unfortunate. And that's why I talk about these issues so much and write about them so much.
Yeah, he did organize a lot of followers, like how many 100,000 brown shirts? And then he turned around and murdered 1,700 of his most faithful followers. I think, you know, the problem is you got to read all the books. There's plenty of books about how horrible Hitler was, but I mean, there's a lot of books that get more down into the nitty-gritty of what he did and what he did wrong and how he failed. And he certainly was not the best thing for Western civilization because 55 million people of white civilization, Western civilization, died. No matter how you look at it, he failed. And you can try to clean up his image all you want, but war is not good for the white race. And young fellows like this that mean well, and sure, they point out a lot of lies about Hitler. But there's a lot of things they don't point out, too. And so I'll continue to take the flack for that. I say, like I say, if there had been no Institute for Hysterical Review, we'd be in better shape as far as criticizing the Jews are concerned. And don't get on TV or radio like this guy did and say there was no Holocaust, because you're falling into the Jew trap of accepting the term. Whenever you get into an argument like that, you don't say there was no Holocaust. You say, well, I don't accept the term. Let's define the term. Are you saying 6 million people died? 6 million Jews? Of course not. Okay. like that. But these guys don't do that, and then they lead people to believe that they're saying no Jews died. Well, that's ridiculous, and that's what gives revisionism such a bad name, is because it's misinterpreted and it's not defined properly. Let's close out here with a little pessimist guide to history. This was 1850. Coastal steamboat sinks. The Irish steamer Royal Eclade foundered in heavy seas off the coast of Margate, England, on March 29th, drowning some 200 passengers and crew. 1851 to 1855, tuberculosis epidemic in Britain. About 250,000 people died in Britain during a five-year outbreak of tuberculosis. Seems like disease gets us more than anything else, and ships going down at sea. 1851, fire in the Congressional Library in Washington, D.C. It was quite a Christmas Eve until a watchman at Washington, D.C. noticed smoke coming from the windows of the Congressional Library in the Capitol building. Help was summoned, and a group of men went to investigate. Upon entering, they found a small fire on the opposite side of the room. Up to that point, it could have easily been extinguished, but by opening the door, the men let in a draft of fresh air that sent the flames shooting up the shelves of books and across the balconies that lined the upper story of the huge room. Firemen arrived, but the weather was so cold that their hoses were frozen and had to be thawed out. Meanwhile, flames raced through the library, consuming irreplaceable books, archives, and artworks. And that would have been a good time for bad people to eliminate a lot of books that should still be there under cover of that fire. You know, I'm always thinking of the dirty deeds. An original portrait of Columbus, Stuart's portraits of the first five presidents, statues of Washington, Jefferson, and Lafayette were all destroyed before the blaze could be controlled. All 35,000 of the valuable books in the main library were completely destroyed, but one particularly important piece of paper, the original Declaration of Independence, was saved. You know, when the Christians destroyed the libraries at, what was it, Alexandria, there in North Africa, this could have been the same thing. Obviously, there were books in that library that there's no replacing them, and we don't know what they said. And so it could have been a very put-up job, and it could have been arson. And think about it. You know, just like Harry Truman, you know, he criticized Hitler for having the book burning over there, which that was just symbolic. He burned a lot of the crapo books that he determined were crapo, and but he didn't get every book that was printed. Harry Truman, at a certain point in the war, ordered all the brass plates of all the books that had not been in print for a certain amount of years to be melted down for the war effort. Priceless, irreplaceable books. The plates, once the plates are gone, that's it. So Harry Truman was actually a bigger destroyer of free speech in the history of the United States and the world than Hitler ever could have been. So that's for those who think I pick on Hitler all the time. Well, that's it for Freya's Day in the Bunker here, She-Wolf Day in the Bunker. I'll be back with you on Moon's Day with some more hopefully interesting things to talk about. Meanwhile, I'm going to crawl into my bomb shelter that's below the bunker because ISIS could be here any minute. They're coming from every direction. I know it because the right wing told me so.